It's December 19th, 2022, 11:31 hours, Ward Green here. The advantage of wearing this jacket is it's got a zipper in the armpit. I can open that up so that it ventilates it, you know, so I don't get as hot with this jacket. So it's just I'm only wearing one jacket also instead of two, so I need extra heat. And it's just another Apple ID message that you keep getting, because I ran my other system, I guess, or something. But you never know what's going on with all the messages you get. You have to kind of take it in stride, I think, and then figure out, is there someone else using my Apple ID, or is it just me? I'm using my Apple ID, and I'm being informed about it because I'm using it on different systems at different times. But anyway, came up right during the video. So this is a video, an unboxing video, actually. But I have some news about the Alienware monitor, because I installed it. It works great. It looks fantastic. I had trouble finding the joystick on the bottom in the middle of the monitor, but I couldn't find it at first. It was further back than I thought, or something. I forget why. There was something about why I couldn't find it. But so I was using the power button and switching on and off, and I knew that the monitor was working, because even though when I first started the monitor up, it came up with the default kind of, all the settings for the monitor come up. And to get those to go away, you have to use the joystick. But I was pressing the power on and off, and I was getting, my displays were rearranging, because the main monitor, the Dell, the new one, was disappearing and then reappearing within the system. So it was rearranging every time I switched the power on and off. So I knew it was there. I knew it was working. I just had to find the joystick so I could get the display to actually show me what it was displaying. Otherwise, I was just seeing all the default settings that had popped up when it first powered on. So I couldn't, at first I was, panic sets in when you first started your monitor and it's not displaying anything. But I knew it was displaying something, probably or possibly, because the power on and off was telling me that every time I powered it off, my displays went like that. You know, because when you have a multiple monitor display system and one of the displays fails or goes off, just power off, it has to rearrange, so, because it has to put all the windows from one onto the other and so on. But you know, it has to transfer windows from one display to the next. But anyway, but the thing about the it was about 11 o'clock at night or something. It was about 3 hours it took me to get the whole thing to get it installed, because I had to put a new label on the monitor to number the new monitor. It's the first monitor that I've got with number 5 on it. I had to, it's just like, I had to make sure I took the old Acer cables and carefully labeled them, so I know that the Acer power cable is for the Acer, you know, even though it probably doesn't matter. But I want to keep track of all these things, so I had to put labels on the different cables I was using before. But there's more to report on this, because when I rebooted this morning, all the displays were all haywire, so it didn't retain the Windows the display part of the preferences in Mac OS, where all the displays are left and right and all oriented where you want them. When I rebooted it, it was all back to some random or wrong display orientation. So I had to move all my windows to the correct displays, which I know by now. I know how to do it. It's just it takes a while. And then I had to reboot again, and it failed again. So I knew there was a problem, so I Googled it and found out that there's a way to prevent it. So I also thought that maybe I could try that, but I also wanted to try rebooting into my internal SSD and see if the problem was on the internal SSD system as well, which is running Monterey 12.4 instead of 12.6.1. Not that the version matters, just that I didn't think the version of Monterey would matter. I thought that the macOS Monterey was irrelevant, but I thought that the internal SSD might make a difference because it boots faster. And that might enable it to retain the display settings. That's what I thought. And apparently, when I first booted it, because it was a new monitor, it was random. And so I rearranged all the windows and, you know, got the displays exactly oriented the way I wanted them. And I tried... And when I rebooted, I forgot to... every time you reboot to a non-default drive, you have to hold the power button. I forgot to hold the power button. I just restarted. I didn't shut down and then hold the power button. Anyway, so it rebooted to my external drive when I restarted, but that did retain the orientation. So what I had done on the external system OS, the Monterey 12.6.1, is I had deselected in Mission Control. In Mission Control, I deselected Automatically Rearrange, and the displays have separate spaces. You'd uncheck those two boxes. And that's what I had done. And so on reboot, I've rebooted it twice now, and it worked both times. The second time I rebooted it, but the other good news was I also rebooted the internal SSD, and I didn't have to uncheck those two boxes on the internal SSD in the Mission Control, in the System Preferences. So it retained it, apparently. So I don't know if that'll work in the future, but if it doesn't, I can uncheck those two boxes on the internal system, which is running 12.4 of Monterey. But anyway, so it looks like it's possible that it's going to work, but at first it's a real nightmare, and you have to Google and look up. I only had to look at a few of them, but a few of the forums, you know, I had to look at the comments by the users who are having the same problem as I'm having, and look at the answers. The answer was to uncheck the two boxes in Mission Control, Automatically Rearrange, and Displays have separate spaces. But one consequence of it is that Displays have separate spaces. If you uncheck that, that means that only one monitor will have your dock and menu bar, and the other monitors won't have that. So you can't just go on any monitor up to the top or down to the bottom or wherever and do what you want. You have to go to your main monitor again and then up or down. Because my menu's at the top and my dock's at the bottom, right? But whatever. Wherever you're keeping your things, they'll only be on one monitor. But I learned that even though it's only on one monitor, you can move it from monitor to monitor. So I tried moving it from my M1 Max MacBook Pro. You go into your displays and you see a little light bar at the top of one of the monitors. That little light bar at the top, you drag it onto the monitor you want to have your dock on, and then you leave it there and reboot. I rebooted just to see, because I'm not sure if it even moved at first or not, but I wanted to reboot just to check. I can't remember if it moves automatically. I think it probably does. You probably don't have to reboot, but I wanted to reboot just to test to see if it would retain it and what would happen on reboot, right? I wanted to see what would happen because I was having so many problems earlier today with rebooting. So, by the way, I did say it was probably 11 something, right? When I started the video, it was 11:31 or something, whatever it is. Yeah, something like that. So, it looks like it. So, but the thing is, I'm up early today. I had 4 hours sleep last night, and then I realized, well, I could function on 4 hours sleep, actually, and I can't sleep. I couldn't get back to sleep. But I can actually function on 4 hours sleep. I'm taking 8 milligrams. Yesterday, I took 8 milligrams of liquid MK4, menitetrinone, vitamin K2, which is the most powerful vitamin to do with calcium. So And I took it with my dairy, and I took it, you know, I took the other things, took the vitamin C, 1 gram, you know, and a few, I took my, you know, krill, and I took the vitamin B12, I took the vitamin, you know, I took the MK7, 6 of those, you know, which is kind of not very many for me. I was taking a lot more than that before. And I took, but now that I'm trying the MK4, I'm trying to go lighter on the MK7 for a while just to see what happens. But then, I mean, just to be safe, I guess, or just to try and explore gradually. But, you know, the thing is, there's so many things you can do. You can't try everything in a day. So you just can't do it. But I took my boron. I took my selenium. Maybe not yesterday, but I think I did yesterday. But I also took my my multi and my glutathione and my thorn multi. I took the thorn multi. I've got a thorn multi, and I'm taking that every day now, the thorn multivitamin. And I think that it's less expensive than the other one from Garden of Life that was, you know, men 50 and wiser, that one. But it's better because it's less expensive. It's easier to get it, I think, too. The other one was a very unusual kind of. It came to the post office. It was shipped from somewhere. I couldn't get it delivered to my house like I can with the thorn, apparently. So there's a lot of things to learn. But I mean, the main thing is energy and health, right? I mean, every day that you, if you can live forever, because you have perfect health. I mean, you know, that would be nice. That would make a lot of other problems go away. They wouldn't completely go away, though. Even if you lived forever, right, you still have problems every day. That's the whole idea. So, but we want to try to live healthy and long, or forever. I mean, live healthy forever is kind of the goal that we're trying to figure out how to do it. So, and the Bible's a big part of helping us to do that. We're going to get to the Bible study hopefully later today. But for now, I'm just doing an unboxing video. I ordered some leather, and I got some new slippers because it's cold in the house these days. The wood, by the way, is burning well, and I tested it with the Klein Tools moisture meter. At first, I was setting it when it first turns on, it's for drywall, and then you press it, and it becomes masonry. You press the mode button a second time, it becomes hardwood. So at the first couple times I was testing it, I wasn't setting it for hardwood, so the readings were meaningless, but eventually I set it for hardwood, and it was always telling me 6 to 12% for most of the wood on hardwood. I was getting higher readings when I had it set wrong, but those readings weren't relevant. So now, mind you, when I had it set, when I was measuring my house, I'm not sure what it was set on when I measured the my internal wood in my cupboards. I want to test that. I should do that right now. I'm going to run down and get that. I'm going to go down and get the meter. I'll be right back. One minute. I've got a big pile of cardboard boxes, 3 of them. They're precarious. They're piled up on top of my recycled. If that had fallen, it would have had empty bottles falling all over the place on the floor where I put them, and I would have had to pick all that up. And I don't like to put that out. I would have had to do it right now. Because you turn it on, and then with the central power button, and then you say, it says drywall. It says drywall. So you press the mode button, and it says masonry. Right? So you press it again. Hardwood. Now I can test hardwood, so let's put it on the hardwood here. 5.9. So, percent. 6.5. 6.2. 6.5, 6.3, 5.7. So it's giving me readings about when you hold the power button, it goes off. Hold it for a few seconds, a couple seconds. It's a very, very nice meter. It's a very nice moisture meter by Klein. Klein Tools. They're the biggest manufacturer of electronic tools in North America, and I had never heard of them until a few days ago when I ordered this, and it was delivered quickly. And so was this package today, too, delivered very quickly. But the interesting thing about the moisture meter is that the wood I got delivered yesterday from Hayfield Farm, which is very close by. I didn't know how close they were until I just checked after, even I think it was just before the wood arrived or after the wood arrived. I think it was after the wood arrived I checked to find out where the farm was. It's quite close to where I am here, so it was like an 18-minute drive, apparently. But the thing is, the wood is much drier than I think we thought. Like it was, we knew it was under 20%, I guess, but we didn't know how dry it was. But it's good. It burns very nicely, but it's not too dry. Like it wasn't so dry that the wood would burn up really too fast, which what happens if you have wood that's too dry. It burns, you know, it you can't sustain the burn for a long period of time, which is what you want in your wood stove. You don't want to have it absolutely, completely as dry as possible. At least, maybe that's true. Anyway, we're not. I guess we don't. I don't really know that for sure. I think it's bad to have it too dry, though, because you know. But the way it is, I had to crack the damper. I had to give it some air because it wasn't going to burn. So I could have slowed it down even more than what I was doing. I had to crack the damper to keep it burning at a high enough rate so that I'm not going to produce, you know, any significant amount of smoke or anything. Hopefully any, you know, to keep it hot enough so that there's not going to be any buildup of creosote in the chimney. That's the idea. So with the wood I was burning before. The thing is, I believe the wood I was burning before was drier because I could turn the damper completely, close it off. I could close the damper completely and it would still burn. Whereas this, I had to crack the damper, you know, maybe a good inch or something, or maybe a little more than an inch in order for it to keep burning at the high level that I wanted, you know, at the heat, at a sufficient level of heat to keep it, you know, significant amount of flame, you know, like a significant flame going on. So it's not just sort of glowing and smoking. You don't want it to glow and smoke. But anyway, but I mean, 6 to 12% though is what the meter told me, and this is only this 6% in here. So 6 to 12 is really good for the wood that I've just had delivered for the firewood, and you know, it's going to be a very big help this winter. I know it will. But I also tested my poplar. I want to report on that. I thought it was too wet because it seemed to be smoking when I first tried to burn it. It was, you know, too wet. It will smoke when it's too wet, right? I mean, and it wouldn't light up when it wouldn't catch fire when I was trying to kindle the fire. And I this was a piece of birch. Poplar. It was only about an inch, you know, it was a small piece. It was only an inch and a quarter, an inch and a half diameter. And it was not lighting up. So that was before I started using the meter. I think I already had the meter at that point. But I wasn't using it yet. But that made me think that the poplar wasn't dry, but that's the poplar I cut from my own backyard. But it was dry because the meter's telling me it was only reading about 13% or something. So, or 12, I think. It was, I mean, once I got the meter set right, the poplar that I, and it's got lots of cracks in the poplar in the end grain that show you that it's dry. So I thought it was dry already before I ever tried, you know, that's why I tried to burn it. I thought it was dry because it has cracks in the end grain. But it, you know, it should be dry, but, and I've got 4-inch diameter logs there too, which I will burn. if I'm convinced they're dry. And I think they are dry. But the thing is, I just cut that poplar like a month. What was it? A month ago or 2 months ago? I'm not sure now. It wasn't very long ago, but it was such a small tree, like a 4-inch diameter tree, right? A very small diameter. So it's not like it's going to take long to dry, but it might be very short time to dry, and I need to learn that. I need to learn how long it takes to dry the different kinds of wood and sizes of wood that I have. So maybe I can burn my poplar as well, and that will get me through the winter, maybe. So I won't have to... But, I mean, the thing is, you know, I can get through the winter without any wood. Because I've also got this new heater running now. Let's change it to high because it's cold in here. It's got a low and high setting, and it can heat the kitchen. I could get more of those heaters. I don't need to use wood. Or I could just buy more heaters, you know, of different kinds. It wouldn't have to be that kind. But it's a little ceramic heater. Like a 900 watt heater or something. And I found out, that my halogen heaters are 800 watts, both of them. That's right. That's what they're rated at. So that's the maximum. And that's what I'm running them at. Because they have two settings, 400 watts and 800 watts. And this one is 900 watts, I believe, something like that. That's just, again, by memory, I'm recalling that. It wasn't the maximum 1500, which it could be. Let's take a look. Well, there's no reason not to look at it because we have it here, right? It'll shut off because I'm picking it up. But if I look at the bottom, it'll tell me. 950. 950. Yeah. The watts is 950. But it's already shut off, so I've got to turn it on again. As soon as you pick it up. The fan keeps running, though, even after it shuts off for safety. Until it cools down, then the fan will shut off. So, but it's 950 watts, that one. So I don't have to run them all the time, but when I'm in the kitchen, I can, you know, or when I want a little heat in the kitchen, I can run these heaters. I don't have to have wood. But the thing is, burning wood helps the overall temperature of the house to come up, and then I don't need to run as many little heaters. So it's a really good thing to have, is to be able to burn some wood. And, you know, I just find that if I go in the bathroom, I can't heat that room. I'd need a bigger heater, because the small heater that I have in there, or I'd either have to wear a big one of these in the bathroom or have a bigger heater, because when it gets cold out, I mean, it's going to be like when it's 50 degrees in the house or 52 degrees, that's too cold without wearing big, thick throws over your shoulders. It's too cold. So, you know, in the bathroom, it's too cold. So I would, you know, the problem is, but that's for me, though. For someone else, I'm generally cold, you know, whereas some other people are not. But I'm low body fat, you know, and my feet get very cold, too, but the big problem was my upper body gets cold when I'm in the bathroom. So, but I have a little heater in the bathroom, and I can run that, and I do run it all the time. I keep the room warmer than the rest of the house, running that little heater on low. And I could run that heater on a higher setting, but I don't want to waste energy. So I think it's better to, you know, use the wood stove to just boost things up. And it's not even cold weather yet. Once we get into the cold, really cold weather, that wood stove will be very crucial. And I don't like it when the temperature goes below 50 in the house. I think that's a little too cold. But I don't think it will go much below 50, even if it gets really cold outside. Because the earth, the basement, the floor of the basement, you know, is touching the earth. And the earth is at a constant temperature, 50 degrees. So it's probably not going to go much below 50 degrees in the house, is what I believe. Never. It never would. So if that's true, then there's no way I don't really need any. I need little heaters, but I mean, I don't really need. I don't really need. I don't absolutely need them if I wore enough clothing. But I have to wear Arctic clothing, you know. But I mean, the thing is, I could save that money if I dressed up warm enough, right? And maybe I'll learn how to do that. But it takes a lot of skill. Because if you're wearing heavy, really heavy clothing, you can't do heavy work. partly because you sweat, you know. And sweat is kind of your enemy when you're in cold weather. So it's a huge learning thing. I'm just talking. I could talk for hours on about this. I mean, I really could, because I'm learning so much. But wood is a really good thing to be able to have on hand to burn, if you've got a wood stove and if you can do that. And I've got a great big garbage bag full of wood shavings from the ash that I've been planing, right, and joint with the jointer. So it's called jointing it. When you joint the wood, you're flattening and squaring up the edges. So I was working on the ash the other day. I haven't worked on that again recently, but I need to get that ash worked on if I want to get that stuff worked. But, you know, I was fortunate that my garage, the wind wasn't blowing in that direction to blow all the snow into the. It's not a garage actually; it's a carport. But the snow wasn't blown in, so I didn't have to clear a lot of snow off my van. But I also need to get a new tarp for the van too. Come to think of it, a new plastic tarp, because it's wearing out. Those always wear out every few years, and you know, and the mice or moles chew through them and things like that. If they want to get somewhere, you know, where it's warm, I got a bigger hole in one of my car covers. It's not the plastic one, but the one underneath the plastic one. I have kind of a synthetic, you know, felt or a synthetic cover that's not waterproof underneath. It's a car designed for a car. The other tarp is just a plastic tarp on top of it, but I have got a normal car cover, like fit. It's supposed to fit a car, but it doesn't exactly fit mine, but it's in the shape of a car. And it gets chewed through by the moles, you know, or the mice, or whatever they are. They chewed a hole in that, and I patched those holes using pieces of another older one of the same material. I'll cut pieces of that and glue it on with goop, and it patches it up. But I haven't patched one of the holes. I haven't patched yet, because it's not really that important, you know. So, I mean, but there's lots of stuff that I can do. I can work on the ash, closing up the garage so the snow doesn't get in. You know, and on the door, wall and doors would both be necessary. But you know what I thought of? I should probably just hang some canvas there. Because if it's really going to blow hard, I probably don't want to have a wall and door, because that's just it increases the stresses on the structure. Whereas if I have the wind to just let it blow through, that's better. So I might just move my canvas. I'm gonna have extra canvas because I'm still processing my ash, right? But I don't have to use it for those particular purposes. I'm just getting as much lumber from it as I can. But what I'm thinking of doing is, because I had to order a new canvas door for the carport, I ordered three new pieces of canvas. I'll be able to use the old three pieces that I have, which are older canvas. I can use those on the other side and use those in place of, one of them in place of a door, fold it in half to make a door, and the other one I can use for the wall. That will keep most of the snow out, you know. It won't keep a heavy wind out, but it will keep, most of the snow does not fall in a heavy wind. So it's going to keep almost all the snow out. The heaviest snow comes in times when there's no wind. It just drifts in on a light breeze, and it makes a mess. So that will be kept out by the canvas. So the canvas is a better way to go. I realized it. I knew there was something wrong with building a structure. I just couldn't. I knew the wind blowing on it was going to be a bad thing, because it might break, first of all, but also it puts strain on the rest of the house. You know, it just puts strain on everything that wasn't there before, so you don't know what's going to happen if you build something. So, and that's why they have, you know, building code administration at the central office of the municipality where they require you to get a building code, right? I mean, a building permit to meet the building code and all that stuff. Because these things matter, how you build things matters, right? And I know that I'm an engineer, and I'm a private engineer. I'm not a I'm not an engineer for sale or for hire. I'm just an engineer. But I think I'm a better engineer than any engineer I've ever heard of or talked to, you know, to or met or, you know, been made aware of, because I study everything holistically, you know, but I study holistic medicine, but I also study engineering holistically in the sense of I really consider everything that's possible to be considered. And Jehovah is the one that directs knowledge through his Holy Spirit, so he lets us in on all the facts, you know. Sooner or later we realize that if we've made a mistake or if there's something we need to know, we realize it. So let's open this box here. It's a big box. It's got some leather. It's got leather. It has some slippers, supposedly. That's what it should have. Supposed to have. Let's turn this down because it's burning my hand. There we go. Let's turn the heater down. You know what? This paper would have been fantastic. I want to keep this paper if I can. Look at this paper. This paper is going to be great for starting. Great for starting a fire. I'm going to be using that paper now, always for that. So I ordered two pieces of leather. It came in one box. That's one of them, and there's another one. But before we get to that, let's get the slippers. Here they are. They're very heavy, considering. Not what I ordered. Is it? Not what I ordered. Maybe the picture didn't show them correctly. I gotta check this. Check this. Hang on. Okay, yeah. They were mules. Okay, they were mules. It was what I ordered. It was what I ordered. They were mules. It's not what I wanted. At least that's not what I thought I wanted anyway. I was trying to get a warm slipper. But this might be better though. You know what? It always is better. It's always better. It's always better when we don't know, you know. I mean, it's always better when we they're warm on the bottom of them. They have like sheepskin. They're going to be really good if they fit. We'll see if they fit right now. But the, you know, the thing is, it's always better when we go with what Jehovah gives us. What Jehovah gives us. He's the one who knows. He knows more than we do. So, he knows more than we do. That's the thing. So I might say that's not what I wanted to order, but maybe that is the best thing for me, and that's why he allowed me to order it. Like, the pictures that they showed, they didn't show they showed the top view of it, and you jam your foot into it, you cram your foot in there. It fits tight. Oh my goodness. They were very inexpensive. That's why I bought them. It's because they were less than $100. They were more like $60, which is $58. That seemed like a good deal. But I wanted them to be warming my whole foot. Not just my toes. But maybe my toes are what get cold. And maybe Jehovah knows that, right? Maybe this. So I'm going to try these. I'll try these on for the size 9, so it's the right size. They're a little bit tight, but that means they won't fall off. They're mules. I didn't want to order mules. That wasn't my intent. I rushed too much, right? I was in a hurry.
Jehovah caused me, he allowed me to do it.
Like he allows us. There's some more paper for starting fires. You can't burn plastic. You've got to burn paper. Okay, so my knife is up here. These shoes are great. They're great for when you have to throw something on quickly, right? I think you don't have to do up a strap or anything. There's no strap to come undone. So there's going to be some advantage in them, but I don't know why. They only showed a top view, so you looked at the slipper from the top, and it looked like it had a heel on it and everything to me. So I was misled by the picture. And they're genuine sheepskin, I believe. I mean, it looks like it's... Maybe they're not. But they're supposed to be. I don't know. They might not even be. They might not be genuine, but if they say they're genuine, they better be genuine. If they say they're genuine, you know... Otherwise, that's deceptive. Yeah, they said they're genuine. I looked up the company, too. The company, I researched the company, and they look like a good company. And they're in China, I think, but I think it was somewhere in Indonesia, wherever it was. It wasn't in Australia, but they were saying they used Australian sheepskin. How do you know? If somebody says they're using genuine sheepskin, and they look like they have a good company, so I believe that it's genuine. And this looks like real leather on top too. It doesn't smell like leather, but it really looks like leather. You see. The different, if leather is tanned using a chrome tan, it doesn't smell the same as when they use vegetable tanning. This looks like real leather. So, I mean, it's very impressive that it looks like real leather to me, it looks like. And if that's real sheepskin, then that's going to be, you know, it'll be fantastic. If it's, because it won't get, there's no odor. You don't get odor with sheepskin, you know, the same. So, I mean, it's got real benefits, but the thing is that they don't feel good on the feet because they have very poor orthotic. Like, they're orthotically very, very bad for the arches and everything. They're no good. So they're not something I would walk around in. It's just something to put on your feet when you have to run to the door or run to the bathroom maybe or run somewhere quickly. When you don't want to put your sandals on, you know? Or, especially when it's really cold in the house, the sandals won't keep your feet warm. If it's really cold in the house, these will keep my feet warm during those times, you know, when I'm just, maybe even when I'm sitting at my computer. That might be the time when I'll be wearing them, right? When I'm not walking around, I don't know. But now it makes me more aware. If I do order any more slippers, I won't be just ordering slippers. I want to get orthotic slippers, or slippers that I can put an orthotic into. So they have to have a back on them. I can put an orthotic into these, but the problem is they're so tight. You know, I could put maybe the heel orthotic, but that prevents the warmth of the sheepskin though. So. I have to think about, I'll rethink this now. So this $58 was well spent because I need to rethink. I need to rethink the footwear for the warm indoor footwear. I'll be rethinking and redesigning how I want that to work. See, if I'd spent $100 and got something that was not ideal, that would have been a lot bigger waste of money, right? This is not a waste of money if it's an investment and it's R&D, right? Research and development. I'm doing research in buying these shoes. Also, when you order a lot of stuff, you're bound to be disappointed with some of it. Because this is difficult. What's happening? Why is that? Okay, they don't want me to open that. They want me to open the end of it. Okay. They want you to open the end of these boxes, not the side of it. So that's what I'll do. I'll open the end of it. So when you order a lot of things, it doesn't always turn out. You know, you try to get the best you can. It doesn't always work out. But even if you don't order a lot, it's not how much, not how many things you order. Some things you order don't work out. So if you only order one thing and it doesn't work out, you're really disappointed, right? But if you order like 100 different things and 98 of them turn out to be great, you're not. I mean, I rarely get the wrong thing. I rarely order the wrong thing. But it's not an issue of whether it's a mule that's the problem. The problem is not that, I think, because my feet will be warm enough, like in mules, because the toes are what get cold. The problem is that the sole of the shoe is not good enough to walk in. It's not orthotic. It's not orthotically designed, right? It's not good enough quality for walking. That's the problem. So, I mean, I don't want to walk around in a shoe that doesn't have any arch support. I don't care if it's just walking from here to the other end of the house. I don't want to walk around. I don't want to walk 10 feet, right, without having arch support. But I will occasionally, but I don't want to do it daily, like every day. I don't want to do it a lot. This is the leather I got, and it looks absolutely fantastic. That's what I got. Look at the piece of leather I got here. See this? This is vegetable tanned leather, and I did research on vegetable tanning and found out how great it is. But this is vegetable tanned leather. It's fantastic looking stuff, and it smells like leather too. You know, it will smell like leather, I'm sure. But look how long it is. There's not much odor in this leather either. It's interesting. I really believe that the mules I'm wearing right now, these new ones, right, they're really leather. I really believe they are real sheepskin and leather, but it doesn't look like sheepskin to me. I've got sheepskin mitts inside my leather mitts that I sewed for myself. That's real sheepskin, I believe. But this company is a good company. I believe it must be real sheepskin. But not if it's, you know, not if it's not. I mean, they could be telling a lie. I mean, but if they're telling a lie, all of their company dreams are just down the drain, you know. And they have a very nice website. They got a beautiful facility, manufacturing process. They say they're using genuine sheepskin. It must be real. So I just don't know enough, you know, to know what's real. But yeah, it does smell like leather. The thing is, vegetable tanning is superior. Okay, it's just superior. So let's open this whole one up. Let's open the whole piece of leather up. Let's get the other end of it. Let's get the other end of it out. It's got a piece of a certificate that came with it. A certificate of authenticity or whatever from Silver Creek Leather Company. The packing list, it's 4 to 5 ounce, which means it's like a couple of millimeters thick. You know, it's not just one millimeter thick. This stuff is, there it is. Yeah, there's the other end of it, the one that was rolled up. So it's one big piece of leather, okay? It's all one. It's got a V cut in it for some reason. It's kind of unavoidable, I guess. I mean, that's unavoidable. That's based on the animal. I think the animal. Let me roll it up. Let's get the other one. Let's get the other one. Put that back in the box and open the other one. Now that I know how to open these, my feet are warmer now because I'm wearing the mules, but I don't want to walk around in them. So I'm not going to be buying any other sheepskin slippers unless I can get orthotics. And figure that out. Figure out how to. I've got enough orthotics lying around here that I can use, probably. But I don't want to put the orthotic on top of the warm sheepskin if that's not the way to stay warm either. I don't know. I think it would work though, because I don't think we need the sheepskin under our foot. I think we can just have the bottom of our foot doesn't get cold, right? So here's the second one of these. Here's the second one of these pieces of leather. We've got to get it out here. Got to get it out. It's packed tight in here. I do not want to damage the leather. Get a grip on it. Yeah. Here it is. Okay. Here it is. There's the second piece. Yeah, it's the same thickness. It's about 2 millimeters thick or something like that. Both of them are like that. And then this one has more defect in it. The other one was just about perfect. This one has more lines, you know, and imperfection. It's got more imperfection, but it's not supposed to be grade A. It's not grade A. It's not the top grade leather. I knew that when I bought it. It wasn't going to be perfect. So this one's the less perfect one of the two, actually. But the other one was nearly perfect. It was pretty well grade A. The other one, I thought, it was really good. If there is a grade A, I can't imagine there being anything better than the other one in terms of not having imperfection. But it did have a notch in it. The other one had the notch cut out of it, whereas this one doesn't. So, but I mean, I don't have to use it. I can cut them up into smaller pieces. I don't have to use them in the same shape they're in now. But yeah, this one is, it's got a great big line down the middle of it. See that color line that runs all the way across? You know, all the way around, there's a line. That line, and it's got a little bit of a bump, like a bump, an unevenness. That's just part of the way the animal was, you know. That's the way the animal was, that's the way the leather came out. Roll this up, roll it up and put it away. And I will now have leather. If I need leather for something, it's very stiff. The leather's stiff right now, but it will soften up over time. That's the way vegetable tanned leather is, so I learned. But that's not the leather you would use to patch your elbows on your jackets or shirts, because it's too thick. You'd use something thinner for that, you know. That's a 4 to 5 ounce leather, it's called. 4 to 5 ounces, because... And that means, I think 2 ounces is about a millimeter, if I recall. But you can work it out, because you can figure out the density, an ounce per yard, per square yard, and then you can work out, you can know that the density of leather compared to, well, in pounds per cubic foot or whatever. Or just the density compared to water, and then you can, you know, water is 62.4 pounds per cubic foot. So you can work it all out. It's not hard to work out, actually, for me, but it's not hard for me because I've done similar calculations, you know, many times. But 4 to 5 ounce weight, you can make straps, you know, small leather goods, whatever it says here, but I'm going to use it for whatever I want, for whatever I need it for. You know, that's the thing. I just knew that I wanted some heavier leather. Now, when I had leather before, I had the black leather. I had pigskin. I never had anything this heavy in terms of thickness. Yeah, so I don't know what it's going to be used for. But I also know that it was a good price. I think these were $90 each. It's an excellent price. But what I want to get is some more of the thinner leather. That's what I should be getting. I got those scraps, but I didn't get. The reason I don't order it though is because they can't deliver it. You know, you have to. It takes too long to get it, or it costs more money to deliver it. Like, the delivery costs can be exorbitant. You know, so I didn't order the thin leather because I couldn't get it in a decent time at a decent price. But I will be getting the thinner leather. You can also cut this. You can cut that leather. This leather can be cut down, as we saw the shoemaker doing. You know, when they were making shoes by hand in Japan, you can cut leather into thinner pieces. So that can be done too. So it's not like there's no way to use it. There's always ways to use it. But now I have some, so I don't have to worry about not having it. I just have to, you know, have association with people who actually know how to work with leather, and that will automatically rub off on me, and then I'll be able to understand what I can do with it. My feet are much warmer now, just having put on the mules. My toes are warmer, that's the thing, so they're not going to be cold in these slippers. Now, the thing is, the mules, the way I'm wearing them now, because I'm wearing them just on my feet, like, you know, because they cover my toe and not my heel, it balances it perfectly because my toes are always colder. So now my toes are exactly the same temperature as the rest of my foot. That's the thing, and that's not usually the case. It's usually my toes are always colder, so I Jehovah knows more than I do. You know, God is the one who knows. He always knows. So they both have, this is 4 to 5 ounce leather. I worked it out the other day. I'll work it out again, but I forget. I just have to know the density. I forget the density of leather, whatever the density of leather is, in pounds per cubic foot, right? If leather floats on, it's obviously it's lighter than water, I think. If it floats, it's lighter than water. But I think if it doesn't float, it's heavier than water. So if it's more than 62.4 pounds per cubic foot, it will sink. That's why wood like ash, oak, and maple, which is 44 pounds per cubic foot, all of those are 44 pounds per cubic foot. They're less than 62 pounds per cubic foot. So they're lighter than water, and therefore they float. They're lighter in density than water. So they displace heavier amount of water when they displace the water, right? So that's sufficient to keep them up. Because if the water were to go up, it would push down harder because it weighs more. That keeps the buoyancy, right? That keeps them afloat. So if it's lighter than the weight of water, that's how you know. So I think leather is somewhere, I'm trying to think, is this heavier than wood? If this were made of wood, I don't know. I think this might be heavier. I have a feeling it's heavier, but 4 to 5 ounces. 4 to 5 ounces is supposed to be, well, you know what? Knowing that square, the other thing is I can calculate knowing the square foot area, right? The width times length, if it's about 2 feet times, or 3 feet, whatever it is, 2 feet times 6 feet or whatever it is in square feet. And then times the number of feet the thickness is, I have to measure that and get it. It could be 2 millimeters. I divide that by 25 to get inches and divide by 12 to get feet. So I could get feet times feet. Feet times feet times feet gives me cubic feet. So that's the cubic feet of it. And then I could say, well, if I weighed it, if I had a scale, I could weigh it. And then I would say it's so many pounds per cubic foot is what I'd end up with if I divided the weight by the number of cubic feet, right? That's what so I could calculate the density very easily too if I had the scale that I could weigh it. But you can go the other way. You just look up the density of leather, and then I can determine how thick a piece of leather is, knowing how many ounces per square yard it weighs, right? So that's the thing. Because the thickness times the yard, you know, a yard is 9 square feet. So the thickness in feet times 9 square feet will be the cubic feet of that piece. So if I know how many ounces that weighs, that tells me how many pounds per cubic foot, right? I can compare it to water then and so on. So you can work it, you can do all that stuff very easily. especially if you've done it a zillion times like I have. So anyway, this is Word Green, 1226 hours, December 19th, 2022. I love my new Alienware monitor in terms of the quality of it, but because I don't want to burn my eyes out, I don't set it on a high display brightness, right? So let's turn that off. So when you set these excellent OLED monitors on a very low brightness, they don't look any better than any other monitor. I mean, they just look like it's just, you know, it's a dim display, but what can you say, right? So the reason I bought it, it was $1,500 with tax. So the reason I bought it, it wasn't because of this display quality, although that's part of it, I guess. Yeah, well, undoubtedly. I mean, if I want to watch a movie and I want to turn it up brighter, I could, but I just think it burns out your eyes. But, you know, I can turn it up a little brighter, and you definitely can notice. The thing is, you notice the display quality when you get to very fine print. That's the thing. You notice it for the very fine print. So it does matter a lot. But especially on a dim display with very fine print, you're going to notice the OLED. It's going to be a very good thing for my eyes. But the thing is, I don't really care. It's not purely because of display quality. It's the fact that I wanted to get another monitor because my Acer already had a problem, right? And it looks like the monitor got damaged. The problem with the Acer, or with any, with also with the same one here, the problem with the format of 3440 by 1440 pixels is it's bigger than the iMacs, which are 2560 by 1440. And they won't drive that. They won't drive the full 3440 by 1440. So even if I get a display adapter for the Acer, I put it in the studio just the other day, just yesterday, I put that in the studio, but then I realized I can't drive it with the iMac because it doesn't drive that many pixels. It won't drive a display at that resolution. So if I do want to hook it up, I have to run it at, you know, 1080 by something or something instead of 1440 by something. I have to drive it at a lower resolution. Which might still be worth it, you know. But the other thing is that the display port on that monitor, I tested it, I think, more than one way, and it just failed. Yeah, I tested it with my that's right. There's something wrong. It's not the cable, because I tested it. Now, maybe I used the same cable, though. I'm trying to think. Did I use the same cable? It could be the cable. But the thing is, you can never test everything, no matter what you do, every configuration. You have to learn some things on the go, along the way, as you go, right? You can't test everything all the time. I knew I needed another monitor as a backup. That's what I was trying to get around to saying. I wanted another backup, another monitor as a backup in case one of my monitors, now that I'm starting to become dependent on these wide, ultra-wide monitors, I need another one just as a backup. So that Acer can be used for something in the meantime. If I want to order the display adapter cable for it, the display cable for it, I need to adapt from mini display port to HDMI. And I can buy a cable for $34.99. I can't get free shipping for $34.99. I have to buy $35 worth of things to get free shipping. So I can order two of them, but then I can't drive these monitors. Like I said, I can't drive an ultra-wide with the iMac anyway. What's the point, right? I mean, so I don't see the point of ordering a cable to drive that monitor if my computer can't drive it. It's just a backup. I can just use it as a backup monitor. I could just keep it on hand in case anything ever happens to one of my other monitors. I need backups. You need a backup. And I've got the older displays too. I got my Dell 19-inch monitor. It's a good one. This new Dell is an Alienware gaming monitor, 165 hertz it's capable of, and I think it might be running at that now, actually. I think it's running at that, actually. Let's go and plug into the other system and see. Let me show you the monitor. Let's go and let's talk. Let's talk while I do this, if I can get this out here without destroying anything. Okay, let's go back in here. I want to show you this. It's just the same. It looks the same, though, as the other monitor. I mean, there's no difference. I just want to plug in the power here. There we go. So I've got a jumping thing on my screen here. What's going on? Oh, yeah, that's just the standard because I rebooted. I fixed my monitor. I was able to reboot. I told you all that. So I've got my display. It looks like I can retain my configuration now, which is great. But the thing is, I mean, the Dell monitor, this is it here. It doesn't look any different other than the fact that if I increase the brightness, it's going to look, you know, probably pretty stunning. But it looks the same, basically. It's not curved as much. That's the other thing. It's not quite curved as the top monitor. But that's fine. It doesn't conflict with it or anything. It doesn't interfere. It doesn't block the view of it. But I, you know, if I had to, I could have hung it one notch lower, some number of inches or inch, whether it's 2 inches or an inch and a half or whatever it is lower, I would have had to have hung it, possibly. But I mean, because it's the right height, it doesn't obstruct my storage of my things here underneath it. It doesn't obstruct anything. It just happened to be that the Visa or the VESA mount system worked. It was positioned the same on this monitor as it was on the other Acer. So on the Acer that's above, too, is the same one. But I just had two identical Acers before. Now I have an Acer above in the middle here and the OLED, the Alienware OLED. It's an OLED display. So let's jack up the brightness to see what it looks like. Let's jack it up. Here it is. That's what it looks like. Full brightness. Adjusting to this value will increase power consumption above the default level. Do you want to continue? No. There. Whoops. Why is it? Oh, it didn't listen to me anyway. It just ignored it ignored my click. I guess I had to use some other method. Let's just bring it down again. But that's the full brightness. I don't know what you're going to see. When I bring it down, I can bring it right down, right? I'm using my monitor app that I downloaded for free. It's called Monitor Control. And it just sits up in my menu bar here. It's a little icon in the menu bar. I click on that, and then I can control my different monitors. So I have it set for, for not too bright. So when I'm on a white page, it's not going to blind me. That's how I decide that. And those are the slippers I ordered from Moza. I think I even got a coupon probably. So it was like $55 or something, whatever I got, but possibly. But let's go to the order and see what I ordered. Right here. I'm getting some socks. But I need to get some longer socks. Let's look at this invoice. Yeah, I got a $3 coupon, so I paid $56. $56 for those slippers. So that's it's a great deal. I had to pay tax, but you always pay tax on anything, really. But there, I've got this thing, the balaclava. I showed you that already. These are the canvas tarps that I'm getting. Yeah, they're going to be arriving, I think, pretty soon, they're saying, too. But anyway, we'll see what's going on. But, I don't want to blind my eyes, so I set this at a reasonable setting. But maybe it'll work. Now that we've got it set up, it might work. But it's a beautiful display, and when you're reading very, very fine text, it does make a difference, you know. The quality of the display does matter. I've got light coming from my heater down below that's you know, causing reflections. That always happens. But I still have the 800-watt heater here. I got that other 950-watt heater in the kitchen now that's new. And gradually, I'm upgrading, you know, my standard of life, I suppose. I got wood now to burn from Hayfield Farm. Thanks, Sean and Jim. Jim delivered it, and Sean talked to me for a long time. It was really good talking to you. And, Jim, he's got three daughters, and he's got three sons-in-law now, too. that he's very happy about how great they are. So I'm going to sign off. This is Ward Green. It's December 19th, 2022. I can use my computer again now. I'm a computer clock. And it's 12:36 hours, which compare that with my watch. 12:36, same as my watch, but not quite to the second, but close. So my watch is keeping good time, my digital watch. My other watch will lose like about two minutes a day or so, or a minute a day. My wind-up chronograph, 17 joules. I still can't get over that. The Waltham watch, 17 joules that I bought in 1970, maybe 72 even. I might have bought it in grade 10, possibly. Might have been 71 even, or 72, I suppose it could have been. But so that, but you know, between 71 and 73 probably is when I bought this. So it's, you know, almost 50 years old, if not 50 years old, this watch. 17 joules, Waltham, wind-up watch with a chronograph, if I can get the buttons working again, which I can't yet, but it's got a second hand on it. It's pretty amazing. It has a stopwatch, like I said, the chronograph, but the buttons for the chronograph, they just the outer part of the button fell off, so I can't depress the buttons. If I could figure out how to fix that, I could get the chronograph working probably too. Wouldn't that be fantastic? I mean, it's just, you know, I don't need a chronograph on that one because I have a stopwatch on my digital watch anyway. So, but I mean, life is a big challenge. Keeping health is the big thing. I have not eaten today yet, but I was up about 10. I went to bed at 4. What was, no, wait a minute, 3, 4, 5. What was it? 5. 5 o'clock. I went to bed in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. But then I ended up getting up, was it 5? Yeah, because I ended up 4 hours sleep. It was about 9 o'clock. I'm getting 4 hours sleep at a stretch now, which is unusual. I couldn't do that before. I'd get up every 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and I have to go to the bathroom. So the K2 has changed my ability to retain water. Like, it's definitely changed it. And that's amazing, because it's really amazing, because I've got a damaged valve, and the scar tissue that's causing this issue. It's not causing necessarily the retention issue, but I think it is. I think it's causing the retention issue. But it also causes, it makes it difficult. It's like, imagine a fire hose coming out of a pinhole. That's what it's like trying to pass water through through my existing facility in my body. It's not good. So it can be painful, and it is painful at many times. It's painful. So I'm used to pain. I mean, I'm used to feeling. It's not so painful that you would, you know, that you would pass out or anything like that. It's nothing like that. It can be painful enough. You might hear me yelling or screaming or something from the bathroom, or yelling about the pain because of that. It's painful enough. But, I mean, pain makes you. It's discipline. It teaches me that I made a mistake back then when I caused that injury to myself, right? I made a mistake, and I'm paying for that. And that discipline is teaching me to be more obedient, so to be more cautious. And I've learned from the mistake. I learn from the mistake every single day that I have pain from it. So I'm learning. So it's, pain is a learning thing. It's about learning. December 19th, 2022, Ward Green, 12:40 hours. I love you very much. I love you. I love you. I love you. Goodbye for now.